Welcome to Access Astrology Podcast. My name is Alison Price. I'm here with my good friend Arwen O'Neill, and we're coming to you from Vancouver, Canada. Today we're going to be talking about the astrology from January 12th to 25th, 2014. We're going to be discussing the planetary movements, the ingresses, what's going on up there. We're going to also be talking about the lunar phases, where the moon's moving to, what's happening. And our 360 topic of the day will be Aquarius.
Yes, absolutely. We are going to be talking about Aquarius, and we've got a couple of Aquarian personalities, and we'll be talking just briefly about the age of Aquarius. And I do that with air quotes because it's a thing. And if you aren't sure exactly what that means, aside from just a sort of cheesy song from the 60s, we will give a brief overview of what that actually is.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So let's start with the ingresses for January, for mid-January. We actually are starting with the 12th, which is a Sunday, but on the 11th is when Mercury goes into Aquarius. So I thought that was sort of relevant to start with, because
it's entering Aquarius,
and that's our topic. And that's us. That's our topic.
That's right.
Not us, personally. So I've got a couple of keywords for Mercury in Aquarius. Intellectual, unconventional, insightful, unusual, off the wall, offbeat. These are all O words. And they're all vowel starting words. Just completely irrelevant. So that is Mercury in Aquarius.
Yeah, so Mercury, I think, sits quite well in Aquarius because it's about communication.
Yeah.
It's there probably would be clarity in what we want to talk about. Getting our messages across is going to come through a lot better whilst Mercury's in Aquarius.
Yeah, and it's an interesting contrast from Capricorn, because Capricorn's sort of more of a traditional, conservative sort of voice, if you want to think of it that way. And Mercury's probably more comfortable in a bit more of a... Yeah, technologically, you know, kind of...
Freer kind of sign
that
Aquarius is.
Yeah, and it's an interesting contrast from going from the Christmas season kind of thing into January, and, you know, people are gearing back up to work and all those things.
Get things together. So that's really the first planet moving into Aquarius
for us. It is, and that happens on the 11th, which is a Saturday.
Great.
And then the next thing that we have isn't until the 16th, which is a Thursday. And then we've got Venus square Mars. So that's Venus in Capricorn, square Mars in Libra.
Ooh.
Hmm. and it's not as ominous as it sounds. It's not, a harbinger of doom for relationships everywhere or anything like that. But it may indicate times of tension or conflict or...
Between the sexes.
Disagreements. Yeah, maybe. Or, financially, there could be disagreements about money or about...
overspending or having, maybe your bills are
having
coming in.
Overspend, yes, exactly.
Maybe the bills are coming in.
They might be. Yeah, exactly. So that's happening on the 16th.
Mm-hmm.
Then on the 19th, we have the sun moving into Aquarius.
Yes.
And that's, we'll be talking a bit more about that later. But so the sun in Aquarius, just a few keywords, in addition to the keywords for Mercury, they're fairly similar. Independent thinking, iconoclastic, eccentric, humanitarian, but in a sort of a cool, detached way. Not humanitarian in the, you know, cancer-loving, motherly arms kind of way, but in a more maybe giving to charities rather than giving charity, so to speak. And detached and cool and intellectual is another sort of image that I get with Aquarius. Although, I mean, they are obviously, you know, affectionate and wonderful people as well. My father and my stepfather, both Aquarians, so... Which is not to say that they're cool and detached.
Well, there has to be something said there about...
Shout out for the Aquarius.
The affection for your mother, at least.
Yes. And vice versa, totally.
Yeah.
So Sag and Aquarius, very good combination, apparently.
Yes. Well, it's a sextile, so...
Totally.
Works well. Works well.
And the last ingress... Or it's not an ingress, it's a... Actually, we have two more. let's see. We've got Mercury trine Mars on the 23rd. That's another Thursday. And then a couple days later, we've got Mercury square Saturn. So both of those very fast sort of aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Not a huge
effect.
Just
for a day or so, they're just going to be in place.
Yeah. And Mercury trine Mars. Trine's a flowing, you know, agreeable sort of aspect. So, you know, we can expect ideas and actions to be in harmony, snappy thinking and in the flow and, you know, good
ideas coming through.
Yeah.
Lots of ideas, maybe.
Good time to put, you know, ideas into action and words into... Yes. Yeah.
Or you get the ideas when Mercury trines Mars, and then you actually write them down when it squares Saturn, perhaps.
It could be depending on what the ideas are. It might be a good time to do something that's a little more, you know, sort of spur of the moment and impactful, maybe, I guess, when it's Mercury's trying more. And then, you know, come back down to Earth and make sure that it's got sustainability or whatever when the square
meets the criteria. Yes.
That's when the manager will get it on its desk.
Because we can weave it right in, can't we?
Whole story. Yeah. And then Mercury square Saturn is pragmatism, dogmatic thinking, limitations, and possibly mm-hmm. a narrow-mindedness or narrowing of options stuff. Yeah. So that is what's going on with the planets over the next 2 weeks. With the moon.
With the moon, yes. Well, we're starting our period off with the moon is still gibbous, and it's actually coming up to, which is just coming up towards full, and we actually have a full moon on the 15th in Cancer. So it's the full moon in Cancer, which is great because that's the moon's sign. Mm. The moon is going to totally dominate that day. The sun will have great difficulty getting any impression going. At that stage, the sun is still in Capricorn, so anyway, so the moon is super strong anyway.
I picture an old married couple with the woman standing in front of
the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
Cooking. Because Cancer is the sign of domesticity and home things, your family.
Yeah, it's sort of an American Gothic, you know, painting sort of image. Yeah.
Exactly. So she's standing there to cook, doing some cooking or whatever it is. Yeah. But, you know, it's got to be a good time. Moon in Cancer's got to be a good time for getting together with your family and this kind of thing.
I have lots of friends with Moon in Cancer.
You do?
Really? Strangely enough, yeah. At one point I counted and it's like half of my friends fully had that.
And how does that Cancer connect to your chart then?
Hardly at all.
Oh.
Really? Anyway, it's weird. Yeah.
Strange, but
it
true.
Is. Yeah. It's conjunct my Saturn. So aside from that.
Okay.
Yeah. I just forgot about that word. Yeah.
So that's nice. Every month the full moon is in a different sign. It moves up the zodiac each time. So last month it was in Gemini. Mm-hmm. This month it'll be in Cancer. And there's your full moon.
Yeah.
It's the culmination of the half cycle. The moon is at its fullest light. It's its strongest position.
And it's always full in the opposite sign from this, where the sun is.
Exactly. So it's really quite strong, usually stronger than the sun, and definitely stronger than the sun in Cancer.
Yeah. Capricorn.
Yes. I think Capricorn. And then moving further on the 19th, the moon moves into the sesquiquadrate with the sun. So it's got the disseminating phase starts, which is where things are now. The moon is reducing in light, reducing in size. We can see less of it. We can see it later on in the evening. And at that stage, it's just changing because of the eight phases. Mm-hmm. And then we actually get the last quarter on the 23rd. So the last quarter is actually in Scorpio. It depends where you are. Further on the planet in Europe and so on, it'll actually be on the 24th. But here for us in Vancouver, it's on 23rd, last quarter, meaning that the moon is then moving into the darker half of the cycle of the moon. And things are just starting to wind down again. Because the moon is constantly creating this. Every month we have this cycle.
Yeah.
We do our podcast every 2 weeks. So we're either at this end of the cycle or that end of the cycle.
Yeah.
And it's slowly shifting as we're talking to you. But generally, that's how the moon is moving. So we end our period with the last quarter.
Excellent.
Cycle, and then next time when we're back on, we'll have the new moon again to discuss. So each time we've got a podcast, we've either got a full moon really or a new moon at this stage.
Yeah.
So full moon in Cancer.
And then the days will start getting longer as well, having nothing to do with the moon at all, but coincidentally. Yes. That'll be exciting.
The days will start getting longer. Woohoo!
Because where we are, it is awfully dark a lot of the
early.
Day.
It's dark early. It really is.
It's, yeah.
Yes.
An astounding amount of darkness.
So that's really how the moon's moving. It's, you know, it's moving well. As moons move.
Yes.
So there you go. Full moon in Cancer during this period.
Great. Well, let's go on to our Astrology 360 topic of the day, Aquarius.
Aquarius.
So I've got a little list of a few Aquarian personalities. And then, of course, I've got my, you know, my two in-depth
Naturally.
I'm calling them archetypal Aquarians.
I must tell our listeners that Arwen is well prepared here with her paperwork.
A little bit less prepared this time, just because, I don't know, scheduling-wise, I just... Mm. Somehow it crept up on me, and then I sort of went, oh my God,
yes.
I have to do all this stuff. But I did manage to smash together some lists and whatnot. So let's see. I've got five people that have sun and moon both in Aquarius,
okay.
And five people with the sun and the ascendant in Aquarius.
Okay.
So that gives us a little bit of a different flavor of personality. But I found something very interesting with Aquarians, and I don't know if other astrologers have observed this, but... and this is actually fairly funny, just with them being the iconoclastic and eccentric sort of sign, that they actually are very difficult to sort of get a handle on what the archetypal sort of, you know, image of... I mean, when we talked about Sagittarius, it was just obvious. It was, you know, we've got Jamie Lee Curtis, and she's this athletic, outdoorsy, sort of androgynous, beautiful, you know, funny, happy, friendly kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
But with Aquarius, it's a little bit stranger, obviously. So... So strange, let's say, is another keyword. Maybe.
Yeah.
But so the five that we've got with the sun and the moon in Aquarius are Lana Turner. Rosa Parks.
Yes.
Gene Hackman, who is actually quite an Aquarius. He's got the sun, moon, ascendant, Venus, all in Aquarius, all in the 12th house.
Okay.
And that's an interesting one. 42% of his planets in Aquarius. And Henry Rollins, the... former lead singer of Black Flag and icon of tattooed musical fabulousness and originality. Yep. And Eddie Van Halen, also a pioneer of music and all that. And I could have, of course, gone on many, many names, but I tried to, you know, limit it.
You tried to rein yourself in, did you?
Rein myself in. And so for the sun and ascendant in Aquarius, we've got Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
Which is, this is where we started to definitely see a sort of a face take shape, a sort of shape more so than a face. In fact, there's sort of this tall, long, gaunt kind of interesting silhouette that begins to form.
Yeah, the Aquarian ascendant is often very tall.
Yeah, the other men in this category, William Burroughs, same. Wayne Gretzky, same. I wouldn't call him gaunt, but, you know, tall, very, you know, sort of long features. And
what did they used to call him? The...
Oh, gosh.
It'll come to me.
And our producer isn't here, but he would know, because hockey.
Not the face or the stick or something. He's got a name, hasn't he?
Oh, boy. He'll be listening to this.
The Great One.
Yes, that's... There you go.
Okay.
Thank you. And then also Matt Dillon and Kim Novak. And an interesting thing about Kim Novak is that she was considered this, you know, the cool, icy sort of, you know... movie star, you know, icon, as opposed to, say, Marilyn Monroe, who would have been like the, you know, sort of the sex kitten sort of thing.
Okay.
Kim Novak was more of the, you know, sort of
ice queen
yes. thing, which is very Aquarian.
Yes, they say a lot of the Scandinavian look is very Aquarian. The tall, the blonde, the even whiter than white paleness of it.
Yeah, totally.
And often I know people with Aquarius rising have crazy hair.
Interesting.
These are the guys with the mohawks, and anything that's weird, they've got it going.
Cool.
The men have ponytails, and you know, against the grain. They go against the grain in many ways. And when it's on the ascendant, with the way they look.
Yeah. Well, I can definitely attest to that with my father and my stepfather. They both have, my father knows not so much anymore, but he used to have a long, long ponytail. And
really?
My stepfather currently does. Yep, definitely. They both have sort of a...
And it is not conventional for men to have ponytails. We see
right,
it now.
We can,
but it is definitely an Aquarian going against the norm.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh.
Yeah. Absolutely. And for the women, I'm trying to think of... Not really. I mean, I've had a lot of friends, more in my younger life when I was in school, a lot of friends that were male and female Aquarians, but... Not any as adults right now.
No,
so
I tell you who gives me the impression of Aquarius women is Cruella de Vil. You know, she's got that.
Yeah.
But she's quite a dangerous woman. She does her own thing. They live their own lives. They walk their own paths. They
Who played her in the movie? Was that Glenn Close?
Mm-hmm.
Or
yes.
Sigourney Weaver?
Yes, yeah. Glenn Close.
Amazing. She's,
So you have many Aquarian women friends, you say?
When I was in school, my best friend when I was in first grade, and then my two best friends when I was in middle school.
Really?
Yeah.
And how does Aquarius connect to your chart?
Well, it's right on my IC, so it's the cusp of the fourth house, and I guess...
Third house, yeah, school.
They were like, you know, surrogate siblings, because I was an only child growing up. Yeah, I guess that would be... That's how I would, you know, psychologically classify
kids in the community.
Yeah. Yeah. And I brought them all, you know, home after school, so it would be like my little, you know...
Because
I had the cool parents.
Oh, you did?
I did. I still have the cool parents.
Right.
So that's that.
That's interesting. I personally never had Aquarian women friends whatsoever because they clash with me, right? But the Aquarian men I can take and keep on coming.
It might be that way with me. I really can't say for sure because, I mean, that was in first grade. I mean, who knows when you're, you know, 6 years old.
Yeah. But the Aquarian opposes the Leo bit. So Aquarian women is not my favorite person. To hang with, and I just don't. I just don't go there. But the men are okay. I can take the men. Definitely, yes.
Cool. Yeah.
You hear that? So it's just one of those things, because of the polarity.
Yeah.
Immediately, I can tell you straight away if they say the Aquarius, I just walk to the other side of the room. I don't even bother trying to make a connection because it's just not there. So, yeah.
See, you're getting the real story now. This is, you know. Yep. Well, I guess I might be the same with Pisceans. Although, it's hilarious because the one time that I've actually admitted to that as a joke, the person I was talking to was a Pisces. I said this as a joke.
Pisces, you know, woman.
Yeah. Hilarious, though, because I said this and then she's like, I'm a Pisces. And I'm like, oh my God, of course you are.
Really?
Of course you are. The minute that I say something, haha, except for Pisces. No, but... Yeah, she's probably the only one that I know currently as an adult. But, you know, such a quintessential Pisces. It's you can't not like her, though. She's amazingly funny. Mm-hmm, her avatar for her phone is the fish from Finding Nemo. The friend one. The one that was always lost. And what was it called? Dory?
The blue one.
Yeah, not like Nemo, but the friend one. Oh. And, yeah, she's like, oh, that's so me. I'm like, oh my God,
so
you're Pisces. Great.
Totally. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but she's just delightful. And she's got a shoe store now, which is Pisces rules the feet, which is amazing. And it's, yeah, it's just so Pisces.
But we're so not Pisces, we're Aquarius.
Yeah. Oh, body parts. Gosh, I don't know.
Shins and circulation.
Is that true?
Yes, and your synapses in the brain.
Well.
Electricity.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, you've got synapses going on.
Totally. The shins, that's a little weird, but yeah, I completely can see the synapses.
And it's the synapses.
Oh, well, yeah.
Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato.
But it's the shin bit. It's the bit below the knee, because that's your Capricorn's, your knee, and below are your foot's Pisces, and they do the shin.
Interesting.
Shins and calves, and down to ankles. So twisted ankles is very much an Aquarian thing.
Oh, yeah. I used to do that all the time.
Did you?
Not so much anymore.
Okay.
Which is weird, because I wear really impractical shoes.
Yes, I've seen some of your shoes, actually. And
it's a miracle I don't
have to. I find them quite adventurous.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I'm just pretty much inert. So, you know, I have great shoes, but I don't walk much.
But they look good when they're on the end of your leg.
Me too, yeah.
How entertaining, so.
And they hardly ever wear out.
No, quite.
Although, if I like a pair of shoes for walking, I will wear them until they wear down, and then I will get them rehealed, and then I will just have them until they fall apart.
Oh, my goodness.
I've actually had shoe repair people tell me, this is the last time I'm fixing these. You'll have to find a new pair for it.
Well, I don't know what to say.
That's a very Virgo thing, I guess.
Is that a Virgo thing?
I think, gosh. Maybe. I don't know. We like what we like.
Do you have any planets in Aquarius?
I have none, but...
Neither do I.
Yeah.
So, gosh.
Yeah.
What do we know about Aquarius?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Only what experience tells us, okay?
Yeah, precisely. But that's why we've done our research.
Exactly.
So, our archetypal Aquarians.
Yes.
We have, and these, I probably could have been a little more...
you can pick some obscure people at times, but do,
these are
do,
pretty
do
obscure.
Share it with us.
Unfortunately, they're very similar, which is they're similar in a weird way, though. It's neat, actually. But I don't even pretend that these are representational of, you know, the Aquarius experience, so to speak.
So these are Aquarian suns?
Yes.
Okay.
And also, well, the first one has Sun, Mercury, Venus, and Saturn all in Aquarius in the 12th house.
Uh-huh.
But she had Pisces rising. And that is Gertrude Stein.
Okay.
So a writer, a poet, a novelist, she had a lot of artist friends, and she collected works of Picasso, of Cézanne, Renoir, Matisse, Toulouse-Lautrec, all of these amazing artists from the early 20th century. She and her brother, they had this incredible art collection. Then they split it between the two of them, and he actually continued to collect a lot of art, and she just basically continued to be, you know, good friends with these artists and sort of, you know, house these salons where they would all, you know, all the sort of expatriate artists.
God,
completely that. Mm. And she sort of actually may have, it's sort of between her and I believe Picasso, who coined the phrase the lost generation for the generation of artists, writers, and expatriates who were living in Europe between World War I and World War II, who were largely American, I should say, you know, expatriate from the
U.S. So much an Aquarian word, that expat.
Yeah, definitely. So a fervent collector of modern art, a lesbian, actually, should throw that right in there because it was a big part of her personality as well. Mm-hmm. She wrote a biography of her girlfriend, wife, woman, her partner. That's a good word, partner. Because at the time, obviously, you know, whatever. But apparently, you know, very obvious. It wasn't like they were, you know, hiding anything from anybody. It was, they were a couple, clearly. And before they were together, even, it was obvious. Everyone knew that she was a lesbian, and that was, you know, what have you. But she wrote a biography of her partner. And she also wrote some, you know, very, very out
edgy
poetry
stuff.
And
yes.
You know, for the time, it's pretty obvious, and you know, back then I think that there was the pretense that this was sort of like, you know, they were just hinting at things, but really if you read it, it's like, okay, no, that's not hinting, that's clearly
okay.
You know, but at the time, whatever. And yeah, so that's obviously very Aquarian, that whole, all of that. And she was considered the literature's answer to cubism. And that's an interesting thing. So basically her writing style was very stream of consciousness, experimental, rhythmical, and sort of about the patterns that the words made as opposed to the meaning. But the meanings would also be, you know, important. I read an interesting poem that she did about Picasso. He had done a portrait of her that it was hilarious because actually he was criticized by someone saying, oh, it doesn't even look like her. And he was like, it will, which is hilarious.
Right.
And then she wrote this poem as sort of a response to him, which, I don't know what it means. I read it. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'm sure that there were lots of, at least I hope, lots of sort of on the down low, like references that I just couldn't possibly get, and neither could anyone. But, you know, definitely interesting style. And I did read also that it's hard to kind of, you know, grasp her work now is, you know, with such a remove, I mean, almost 100 years.
Yes.
Like, looking back and reading them and kind of, you know, they don't resonate as they might, you know, at the time. But, yeah, so very groundbreaking, very, very eclectic and interesting.
Do you recall this poem?
Do I recall?
Maybe we could recite.
Oh, yes, we can link to it. I could
put it up.
I'm not going to recite it, but yes, I will absolutely link to it.
Wasted on the burning back.
What I really liked about it was that she mentioned Napoleon a bunch of times in it as a sort of repetitive word pattern type thing. And I thought that was neat because Napoleon and Picasso, that's kind of an interesting little comparison there that she was, you know, not so subtly throwing at him, you know. And also I like the idea of like just, you know, Picasso, obviously this, you know, massive personality and this, you know, sort of rather, you know, formidable lesbian having, you know, having this kind of like back and forth, battle of wills. I think that's a really fascinating idea.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I like to think about those conversations that happened 100 years ago. And the next one that we have, let's skip forward a generation and switch the genders. And we have William Burroughs, who's very interesting and very wow kind of character. He is Sun, Mercury, Venus, Jupiter, Uranus, and Ascendant, all in Aquarius.
Right.
Any picture of him that you see from, you know, from his 20s all the way up to when he died in the 1990s, he looks just iconically, well, he's got this fedora, he's got the trench coat, he's long and thin and gaunt and tall and angular and quirky, like crazy, and very
they often are very tall, they really are with these ascendants, right?
Totally.
And that's how you can often check a birth time if the Capricorn, which is stout and solid, it comes against the Aquarius, which is tall and willowy.
Yeah.
Wiry,
willowy, those are great words, definitely. William Burroughs, he hung out with Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac. He was bisexual. He had a couple of wives, one of them accidentally shot in the head, famously. had
unusual stories around him.
Very much so.
Okay.
He was an opium addict and other drugs most of his life. Wrote Naked Lunch, famously probably the most famous and characteristic work of his. And this is where he's very similar to Gertrude Stein in just the experimental stream of consciousness style of writing. Not that you'd actually, read either of their things side by side and think that they were similar.
Right.
But just in the sense that they were very experimental, very different, very...
very fringe.
Yeah. And not necessarily received well at the time by, people that they weren't intended for.
Okay.
But Naked Lunch, and he claims, we're not sure, whatever, that it was written by, writing in, kind of... in the time and autobiographical, and then cutting up all the pages and then scooping them up together and pasting them together wherever they fell, which it does read that way. It's very disorienting. They switch between, violent, hallucinatory sort of imagery to like just non-linear, completely.
Yeah. So none of these people are mainstream at all. They're not writing.
No, I wouldn't say.
Yeah. That's the Aquarian, though. They
totally
resist the mainstream.
And even the one president that, that was in that tall list, Abraham Lincoln, tall, angular, wiry, intellectual. Yeah, exactly. And a very non-linear thinker. I mean, he, as presidents go, certainly they have to, represent the establishment. But, very Aquarian president. I believe that...
Reagan.
Franklin Roosevelt?
I think Reagan was an Aquarian as well.
Yes, he was, exactly. And he was the one with an astrologer, which is also ruled by Aquarius.
Yes.
Who may have prevented him from dying when he was shot. That's what they say. Those are my two
interesting
archetypal Aquarians.
So to wrap it all up, Aquarians are pretty sort of different.
Yeah.
They insist on being different.
Yep. Yeah. Intellectual... sort of
cool,
philosophical, cool thinkers. Yeah. And here's an interesting observation from a personal standpoint.
Well, that's all we have, right?
There are. All of my... Oh, my goodness. I just remembered a very, very good friend that I had who was an Aquarius. And, I can't believe I forgot. Delightful, delightful girl. Person, woman, I guess. Yeah.
And then listening, thinking, I hope she doesn't mention my name.
No, I'm not going to mention her name. But I just remembered, as an adult, yes, very good friend. Yeah. And she fits into this pattern that I was thinking of. All the friends that I've had that have been Aquarians that have had pets, their pets have been named, strange names of a person, like Ben or George or Phil, like a dog named Phil or, a cat named, Stuart or something.
Okay.
All of them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of an interesting pattern, just because I'm thinking of like five different people at least. Okay. And all of them, their pets were named, some random, like you'd, find like a construction worker would be named, or whatever. Like Doug,
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or, one of them had a cat named Cat, which all of these are very, for some reason, apparently an Aquarian.
Kind of weird, isn't it? Kind of weird all around.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's they name their pets after people. That's the takeaway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And of course, we can stretch Aquarius into what you said a little bit earlier and go down a much longer road.
The Aquarian Age? Yes, we can. So here we have some controversy, sort of.
We do? Never.
Let's hear
the controversy.
So the controversy is because, the ages in astrology have to do with the precession of the equinoxes, which, yes, all astrologers, even, Eastern, Western, it's all we agree that happens. It's scientific, it happens. The Earth wobbles,
yes.
It goes backwards. It takes 25,000 1,800 years to come around full circle to the same spot.
Yes.
Which basically has to do with the, you know, North Pole pointing somewhere in the sky and then where the constellations appear to be originating when the sun comes down, the sun comes up. Same time every year, and then, you know, where those constellations are is slightly different every year. And slightly differenter until 25,000 years go by, and then they're in the exact same spot. Which, how they figured this out in ancient times is completely baffling and amazing.
Okay.
But many, many cultures simultaneously did actually, you know, figure that out somehow. So, the miracle of our ancestors.
And the controversy is,
the controversy is, when exactly do these ages begin and end?
Oh, I see.
Because if you look at the constellations, obviously there's not just 12, you know, spaced evenly apart in the sky. You're giving this mock look of amazement. Yes. No, they are not like that. It's, you know, they're, some of them are large, some are small, some of them are overlapping. Obviously, it's not, you know, possible to go, okay, now we are, you know, in Aquarius, as, you know, the actual constellations in the sky are dictating that. But we do have the tropical zodiac, which is what in Western astrology we follow, and that is that's to do with the seasons and where, I mean, they're very precise. We can say, okay, we've entered, you know, Virgo now because the sun, you know, blah blah blah. I'm doing this thing with my hands that you can't see out there in podcast land, but yeah, so we divide this up and based on that we get 2150 years per sign.
Right.
So that is completely, you know, mathematically fine. But then where do they begin and end is still kind of a, we don't know. But one of the things that sort of anchors it in, you know, in Western thought is, Western astrology rather, is the birth of Christ. Because that is, you know, with the fishes and that whole thing, it seems as though that would be a Piscean age marker. So we like to think, well, maybe that's the beginning or something of the age of Pisces. And if you go back, there's all sorts of, you know, really great correlations with the beginning of the Aries, you know, and the Bronze Age and, you know, Alexander the Great and all these things. And then you go back farther than that and you have the Mycenaeans and the...
Age of Taurus.
Yeah, exactly. And the bull, you know, bull, you know, all that
I
stuff.
I do. Okay. So...
So there's, but nobody's actually, you know, agreed.
Oh, so the controversy, what you're saying is when does it start? That's your question.
Yeah, that's the question.
Oh, I see.
And we have no answer. That's just the question. But it's, we're definitely in the age of Pisces unless we've already moved into the age of Aquarius. This is what's going on right now. So we're in one or the other, probably towards the end of Pisces or towards the very, very, very
end. And is that where you're standing on this? Okay.
Yeah, I don't actually have a solid opinion.
Okay.
I don't think.
Oh, okay.
I mean, at the beginning, it could be like around the middle of this century that we moved into Aquarius, or it could be as late as like 23 something. This is the range of possibility that.
Uh-huh. So, okay, so what we're talking about is where the actual vernal equinox occurs in the constellation as opposed to the zodiacal sign. That's the difference, because the constellations are wider and thinner than each other, but they're still, whereas the tropical zodiac is 30 degrees.
Yeah.
So where the vernal equinox occurs when it's backing out of Pisces into Aquarius...
It could be, you know, any number of years.
It's open to debate.
Very much so.
Now, when I was studying astrology, everybody said to me that when Uranus moved into Aquarius in 1980-something... Mm. That was actually the launch of the Age of Aquarius.
Because it was just coming.
It was just coming up to the just before the year 2000, because that's about the number.
Yeah.
And when Uranus went into Aquarius for that cycle, that would be the start of the Age of Aquarius.
Oh, well,
otherwise, you have to wait another 84 years
until it does it again.
Which would take it out of the range.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. Let's do that.
We've solved it. Your view.
Interesting that I had not heard that. I mean, I haven't
got the date in front of me when Uranus entered Aquarius last time. Maybe you can dig it out of your ephemera. It was like, was it 80 something or 90
something?
Can't recall because it's in Aries now, so it must have been 14 years ago, give or take a whisker. And that's what we were told. And because I was learning astrology prior to this time, and our teacher said then we were still in Pisces and would only actually go into Aquarius when Uranus took control of Aquarius again in the modern age, because at that stage we had TV for the first time. In that cycle, and all the electronical
computers all of that
and the internet actually was birthed during that period. Definitely. Which are totally and utterly Aquarian things, whereas in the previous cycle of Uranus entering Aquarius we were still Piscean. There's a bit of a clue. So, you know, during that period when Uranus was in Aquarius, which I believe was about 14 years, or was it 7 years? I can't recall. We're struggling here. That would have been the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
Because there is no fixed date.
Yeah, exactly. So
we look for something else in the smaller cycles to trigger it for us.
Totally. Yeah.
So that's maybe a bit of a stretch there. But the idea is that between Christ's birth and when Uranus entered Aquarius, that was the age of Pisces.
Yes.
This was the 2,000 years we've just come through where religion was strong, Christianity was strong, and it was strong. It was growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
Right? Well, Christianity was growing, right? The fisherman business and the symbol for the fish.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas before Christ's birth, it was the age of Aries, which was the Ramesses, the first, second, third.
Yes.
And all that going on there in Egypt.
Yeah.
Where the ram was actually, and you can still see it in the symbolism, and those pharaohs were named that way.
Totally, yeah. Which is, I mean, all the correlations with the ages are fascinating.
It's so interesting, it really is. And then you go back further to the
and
ages
it's so,
of Gaul, and I'm racking my brain because you caught me off my back foot here. With the previous to the Egyptians, the...
Macedonian Mycenaeans, there's the... let's see. Because they are Crete with the bull...
That's when they started farming cattle.
Right? Yeah, totally.
And agriculture took over, you know, prior to that.
Yeah.
When it was Capricorn. No.
Taurus.
It would have been Aries.
Taurus.
Gemini, before that.
Oh, yeah,
Anyway.
Yeah, and the beginning of the written language and whatnot happening during Gemini.
Yes,
as the written records of...
That's right, and during the age of, when it was the age of Aries, which was ruled by Mars, that was when the Romans were strong, and they built weapons, they built armor, they built ballistic missiles, and they actually built up the Aryan fighting machine.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
To conquer the other lands, and they did. That's when they came up as the first Roman Empire. Then when Christ came along, we were all now got to be nice to everybody.
Right, and that's worked out well.
I know. So the question now is, we're moving into the age of Aquarius, where people are, I don't want to say turning their back on mainstream religion, but a lot are, and they're moving forward because... Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, because Aquarian, we've got... Well, I mean, famously, Abraham Lincoln and Charles Darwin were born on the same day. And Aquarius...
I love Darwin.
You're right, exactly. I mean, it's very interesting, you know, from Jesus to Darwin. And, you know, we've got the Jesus fish on the back of the cars.
That's right. You know, it morphs into...
with the feet. So that's interesting.
It is. And, you know, you see it in our generation, because when I was at school, we had religious as a subject, and now my kids don't get it. Oh, yes.
Oh, interesting. Oh, yes. I mean, well, you've heard my experience with that in school.
Well, things are different here in North America. They don't teach religion as a matter of course, whereas they still do in the West. So.
That is interesting, because here we actually hear that the Brits are less religious overall than...
It's still a subject.
Huh. Uh-huh.
So anyway, but now what's happening for the future generations? We're all bowing down to what? The internet and the apps and anything that comes through.
Yeah.
You don't need to go and talk to people anymore because you've got so much going on with your Facebook and all that kind of thing. Which Facebook is, of course.
In Google we trust. You
know. Yeah, so the gods that we have been praying to are going to change into the tech people, the tech world.
Yeah.
And dare I say, the Bitcoin people.
Yeah.
We were talking about that earlier, right?
Well, it's fragmented, but it's also egalitarian in a way.
Yes.
I mean, as... It's kind of funny because it's ironically egalitarian because it is still, you know, ruled by these gods of industry,
exactly.
Google and the,
that's right.
You know.
But like when the euro came out, was that 92 or something? And that was part of the Age of Aquarius going on. Yeah. Where the whole, who would have thought that would have ever happened?
Well, yeah, so shortly after just world wars and all.
Exactly. But it went Aquarian.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, totally. Anywho.
So we've got 2,000 years odd of the Age of Aquarius. I think we're into it. We've got to be with all this technology,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, don't totally. You think? I do. I really do. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Besides, who wants to wait until 2150 or something? Jeez, you know.
We'll embrace it now.
Exactly.
And hopefully astrology will pick up at the pace again in mainstream.
Well, I think, aside from the actual numbers, it seems to have. It really does. I mean, if you just look at how many books are published and how much...
And universities are now giving it as a course. They didn't used to do that as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, so. Yeah. And there's, I mean... Just the availability of, I mean, we just, you know, creating a podcast out of nothing, you know.
Exactly.
Anyone can do this. And
Age of Aquarian stuff. And
yeah.
We've met a friend from nowhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think that definitely is democratization of information and of, you know, what used to be sort of protected esoteric knowledge. And, you know, that's a very Piscean thing. Even though, you know. Pisces seems like it's kind of for everybody and all the stuff, but it's, yeah.
That's right. So there you go. So we are, there's a shift, and this is what we're living through.
Yeah.
These ages.
Definitely.
But it's interesting because we can actually take it back to, it's not just something that astrologers have dreamed up.
Yeah.
It's actually the actual crossing of the vernal equinox is moving backwards through the zodiac.
Yeah.
And that's why we have it.
Yeah. Mm. Totally.
So there we go. We
that's the Age of Aquarius solved.
Solved. Because when you said there was a controversy, I thought there is. What about what?
Yeah, that's what I read on Wikipedia.
Oh, I see. Good. Well, there you go.
See, exactly.
Where do you get your information from? Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hive mind. That's where.
Isn't it? It's like the Borg. You will be assimilated.
Oh, yeah.
Resistance is futile.
I've been assimilated completely.
So I think we've given that a good ringing.
It's like, I'm usually the one with the geeky Star Trek references. corrupted you. I love this.
You know what it is? I never used to watch Star Trek, but my husband watches science fiction. Over the years, it has been gone through, and I can still put my foot in it, right?
Yeah.
About Star Trek, I'm not that good on these
quizzes,
but I do follow some of it, right?
Yeah.
I noticed 7 of 9, you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's hot, yeah.
But we look like her, really, don't we?
Oh, totally we do, yeah. So you have cards. You have some cards to review.
I do.
And so, these are neat looking. They are square.
Yeah, so for our product review this week, I have got in my clutches the Mandala Astrological Tarot by A.T. Mann. Now, he's the guy who wrote the book.
I have it.
That you have
one
on your bookshelf, whose name eludes me. And anyway, and he designed a tarot deck with astrological symbolisms in it. And it's slightly different because the cards are square.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Not round as you might think if you just take the word mandala.
Yes, and they're not like a regular deck of cards shape. So the idea is that when you're shuffling, you can rotate 90 degrees these cards. And I'm actually going to... I'll ask you to shuffle them. We'll do an on-the-spot reading. But shuffle for a bit. Let me just explain. So what we've got is we've got this... I think it's the 72 cards.
78
cards.
Unless he has...
The full deck. Yeah. We've got the Emperor. We've got all the major arcana. We've got the minor arcana. And then the designs are much more lightweight than you would see in the Rider Tarot deck. Mm. So we can put a link to it up. And I do like it a lot. And the idea is that if you're an astrologer and you want to tap into tarot, instead of having to go and learn all the tarot cards... Mm. You can spread these out as you would a chart.
Oh, cool.
So you lay down 12 in a circle.
Mm.
And you've got your cross cards, you've got your ascendant card, you've got your second house card, and it just and you can read it from there.
Nice.
So that's the idea.
Cool.
Now sometimes if I've got time on my hands, I will do these types of readings, but they do take a bit of time. Rather than
they're suitable for just a 3-card reading as well if you wanted to do
that. I think so, yes.
All right.
Absolutely. So you just give it a bit of a shuffle and then break the deck and we'll lay some cards down. I'll do a full reading. I'll do ascendant, da-da-da-da-da.
Fun. Okay, so I feel like I've shuffled those.
All right, so can you cut the cards?
Oh, sure.
Thank you. So I will take these. So I'm going to have to read it. So for your ascendant position, we've got the Six of Wands, which is Jupiter Leo.
All right.
For your icy position, we have the Pentacle Ace, which is Earth.
All right.
Where am I going with this?
Wonderful.
On your descendant, we have the Five of Cups, Pluto, Scorpio.
Yeah. Very nice.
And then on your midheaven, we have the Nine of Wands.
It looks like a roulette wheel.
Mars Sagittarius. Yes, it's divided into nine. So if we look here on the ascendant, we've got the Six of Wands, right? And what he's got written down in English is Jupiter Leo, for those who need English. Otherwise, the symbology is straight in there, Jupiter Leo in yellow.
Oh, I think I need the English, actually, because I could see that, but... Oh, yeah.
You can see the glyphs, yeah. Right?
Yes, I totally
If you know
can.
What you're looking for. Now, if I knew tarot well, which I don't, I would know what the Six of Wands meant.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not my strength. My strength is rather a Jupiter Leo connotation on your ascendant.
So he's basically translated all of the 78 cards into
astrological combinations. So, of course, because we've only got 12 signs of 12 houses and 12 things, there's not enough to go around. So he's brought combinations together under the meaning, hopefully, of Six of Wands. Yeah. Now, could I ask you, do you understand what the Six of Wands means in tarot?
Yeah.
Could you give me a brief...
It's sort of... Now, of course...
I know, I've got you on the spot, but what can I do?
Well, I am picturing the card from the deck, the last deck that I remember seeing, and it's sort of a... It's almost like the Chariot, but a minor arcana version of it. Mm-hmm. So it's like arrival, victory, sort of achievement kind of thing.
Okay.
I'm going to want to look that up, though, to confirm exactly that.
But when we talk about wands, usually a fire sign. I know the wands are the fire sign and the swords are the air signs. So for wands, we've got Jupiter Leo. Now, Jupiter, is, of course, the ruler of Sagittarius, which is a fire sign. Jupiter's the biggest planet we have. And Leo, of course, is the fire sign, the main one that we have in the color yellow.
Yeah.
So if you combine Jupiter Leo for a reading... We would say that it would correlate with the Six of Wands.
Yeah.
So the idea is that if you're just a pure astrologist, such as I am, and I'm not good at tarot, I can actually get some interpretation from this, and I would want to say on your ascendant sign for today's reading, you're feeling optimistic, outgoing, buoyant, and look at you, you're looking good, the hair's going well, you know, you've got the jewelry's on.
Colours happening.
You've got your look going there, and you're buoyant and outgoing. So that's certainly the situation. I don't see you as having a problem or an issue or being depressed or tired or anything today. But isn't that how you always are?
Well, I narrowly missed catching a cold this last week, which is great. I thought I was catching a cold over the weekend and I feel good now.
So there we are. So would you say you feel Jupiter Leo on your ascendant today?
Oh, gosh. I'd like to say that. I don't know if I ever feel Jupiter and Leo. That's very grandiose. But I feel as Jupiter Leo as I'm going to.
You're feeling good. So down here now on the IC, which is your home, your roots, your family, your situation at home, we've got the Ace of Pentacles. And again, I don't really know what that means.
Well, Pentacles is sort of coins in, you know, it's sort of wealth.
So it's Earth, isn't it?
Earth, yeah. And the Ace would be like...
One penny?
Yeah.
or one Kruger round, what is it?
Yes.
Both?
Yes.
So what he's got written down at the bottom, it was just so simply Earth. So this is the card representing Earth, the whole element of Earth, astrologically, on your IC. So again, I would say that today, how you are feeling is, you know, you've got your feet on the ground, you've got your foundations under you, you're not feeling weak or floppy or anything.
No, my apartment is fairly earth-toned.
And it's really quite organized,
clean.
You know.
Yeah.
Things are comfortable and...
Yeah.
You've got some satisfaction. It might, I don't want to say that you might be a bit predictable at home in your life, but it could be comfortable to be like that. And why not in your own home?
Exactly.
In the comfort of your own home,
yes,
you know?
Exactly.
Barefoot on the couch, right?
Totally.
So again, that's just supporting what I'm seeing in you
Indeed.
For today.
All right. Descendant, hit me.
Descendant, okay. So the descendant always knows your relationship, he's the guy in your life and what's going on there. So we've got the Five of Cups.
Mm-hmm. Aw.
What is it? So cups is water, as I understand it.
Yes, cups. So is water, relationships, emotions, love. etc. And five, not so good, sad. So, yeah.
That's your tarot reading. Okay. So what are our astrological interpretation here is Pluto Scorpio.
But he is a Scorpio, so maybe it just, you know.
Ta-da! I rest my case. Astrology lives, rules, and is always correct.
Indeed.
Pluto Scorpio, and we know that your guy is a Pluto Scorpio.
Yes.
You've got an emotional relationship with him. It's on a Pluto Scorpio level.
Yes.
And if you don't know what that means, then it's deep and absorbing and
Plutonian and
all-encompassing. Yes. This is who your guy is. There's not something fishy going on.
It's not a sad cup spilled loss, you know, thing. It's just,
no.
Yeah. Scorpio.
Nice. Pluto Scorpio. Yeah. Large as life. Not Mars Scorpio. Pluto Scorpio. There it is.
Yes.
You're digging deep.
Exactly.
So, well, this is the perfect reading, isn't
it?
You'd think we'd pick these beforehand.
But I did not.
So you're midheaven.
Yes. Which is career and external presentation and
your reputation, what you're putting out into the world. So the tarot is the Nine of Wands.
Oh, well, that's a good card, I believe,
because as I understand it, wands are air signs. Oh no, fire signs.
Yes.
So you're, that must be inspiration. There's your key word. And nine, I'm not sure where nine goes.
Well, actually, I was thinking when I said yay, I was thinking Nine of Pentacles, so I'm actually not 100% sure that is a good thing. I'm gonna go check. Because I don't have all 78 totally set to memory. Sadly.
That's right. Well, anyway, I'll just keep going. And
yes, please.
What the guy has written down here for the astrological interpretation for the Nine of Wands is Mars Sagittarius.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, see, those correlations are very interesting because a lot of the tarot cards, there are sort of, you know, very negative visual sort of, you know, themes. And death, obviously, and hanged men. And, you know, there are... especially in the fives, with their laws. And it's like the poverty and the beggars outside the church and things like this. And, you know,
there's no beggars on these cards.
No. But it's interesting that he's translated them all into, you know.
So he's got this combination going of Mars Sagittarius. So we know Sagittarius is broadcasting, outgoing, fire sign. You've still got the Jupiter's on the ascendant for this chart. So clearly you're sending out a good message. It's going internationally. You're positive, you're buoyant and so on. Mars, you've got the energy to do it.
Yeah.
You're pushing things out there, you're energetically pursuing it. So really, you look like you're in the peak of health.
The peak of health, excellent.
And you're your life is going well because we can see all these positive indications.
Yeah.
So...
sweet.
Yes. Now, if we look for some of the major arcana, which we didn't seem to pull out there... I'm just going to work my way through it.
The
Emperor is Aries.
Oh,
okay, so that's an interesting one.
That is. I don't know if I would have chosen that. I would have probably said Capricorn.
Oh, quite not.
Well, you know.
Stars is Aquarius. Now we're talking about Aquarius today.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think of that combination?
I think that's perfect.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a couple of...
What an interesting picture. There, it's a flamingo.
There's
a pyramid.
So here's the Virgo. Look at the card.
Virgo. The Hermit, yes.
The Hermit. Completely. Do you think that's you?
I do. I get that card a lot.
So, you know, it's really quite interesting how he's put these combinations together. I don't know if everything is covered, but there the Empress is Venus, which we know is the tarot reading, isn't it, for that?
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Interesting.
So if you can read tarot or you can read astrology, you can use these cards.
Yeah.
This is why they're actually quite interesting.
And it provides sort of an alternate, you know, interpretation if you are used to the tarot symbolism. And as I was, you know, saying, we were saying, it's kind of dark and, you know, a lot of them are very negative and sort of ominous.
Yes.
That this sort of gives you a different interpretation with the same symbols, but not the same symbols, but the same ideas, but sort of cast in a more, you know, you could kind of interpret it nicely or... as a challenging
thing.
Yeah, totally. So that's really cool.
Ideally, that would be what we would want to. So strength is coming up as Leo.
Yeah.
I don't know how you see that.
I see that as perfect.
Tarot-wise, you know.
Yeah.
So it's actually just kind of interesting. The cards themselves are quite simply drawn.
But there's a lot of a lot of little details and interesting stuff. Like the Hermit, for example, this Virgo card, there's a lot of crazy stuff in there.
Yeah.
We've got sort of a Navajo blankety thing. We've got like a mountain in the background. It's very sort of...
And we've got a tree with leaves and a tree without leaves. So.
Right. And it looks like she's camping, but she wants to have some modesty. And so she's like strung up this blanket to cover, you know, so she can get dressed behind there.
Oh,
that's how I'm thinking of it.
Goodness. I think she's kipping behind
projecting a little, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just
and she's got her wireless connection, or her, you know, big cable, so that she can be connected to the internet back there.
That's right. So it's all go, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Living alone by herself.
Totally. But just in case anyone comes up, she's got, you know, the blanket modestly, strung across there.
Modestly. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. So, and it's also further detail on it that it's picking up. Mercury's written twice because it's in exaltation and rulership.
Mm.
And the yod is mentioned because that's the major aspect pattern that he relates to the hermit.
Interesting.
Okay.
Cool.
And if we had more time, we could dig through a lot more of them and come up with some of the... As I say, the major arcana are sort of quite interesting.
Yeah, not to put you on the spot, but now I'm wondering about these things in the top right-hand corner. Is that...
Oh, is that Yiddish?
I think so.
I think it is.
Interesting.
Because Yod is a number in Yiddish. I think it's one or two. I can't recall.
Oh, so you just happen to have the one that it's...
I did. That had a Yod on it. There you go.
That's so funny. Yeah, so every single one of them has a word in Yiddish.
So when the card... We've got the world card, which is Saturn, and the rulership is Capricorn and Aquarius, because Saturn rules both. So they sort of mean something, and I think it's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer's the moon. Why Jupiter's there? I'm not quite sure.
Huh.
But... Maybe it's just the journey, and that looks like the Sphinx is to me. So, I don't know.
Cool.
I think if you never had a tarot deck, this would be dead interesting to get to be a starter deck.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's like a bridge between the two.
Exactly. It's like, yes, he's really brought... and this, you also get to this handy-dandy little book about how to read the cards.
Yeah.
And there's a more detailed explanation about every single card here. If you've got time, you can go through all of those. So this is quite a great gift.
Yeah.
If we're looking for gifts.
Yeah. If you're looking, exactly.
I saw them on the shelf in, actually it was Bellingham, and I just had to have them, and I can't even tell you how much they cost, but I just had to have them.
Are these rare, or?
No, you can just order them.
Oh, okay, excellent.
They used to be, they were carried in the bookstores when they first came out, but now you just need to order them, and they're everywhere.
Yeah. Wonderful.
So,
it's quite... Another thing where these, you know, like even 12 years ago when I started to collect a couple of tarot decks, they were not easy to find. Well, I mean, I also kind of had a few that I wanted that were just randomly hard to find.
Yeah.
But,
actually, they've got them at Banyan Books. I saw them when I was there last time.
Cool. Very good.
So, but it's interesting. If you're into tarot decks and astrology, then get one that serves both purposes, because you can read the cards quicker.
Yeah.
Now, my sister is she reads tarot and has them for like 20 years, and she uses the Rider tarot deck, and hers are like fragmented and frayed, but she keeps going with them because they talk to her.
Yeah.
But I never had much luck with those, but I do find these particular ones are much better for me because I understand the astrological symbology as well, and I can build on that when I'm trying to do a reading.
Yeah, well, that would help because, you know, the few times I've actually done readings for friends, I've done the old flipping through my book thing. Which is, you know, that inspires a lot of confidence. Read.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. It's not perhaps on everybody's bookshelf, but if you're into astrology, and you would be if you're listening this far into this podcast, then I would definitely get one of those if you can, because they're actually quite good to learn astrology as well. Yeah. And and it's a visual thing. I often take photos of them and use them in my blog.
Nice. Well, we will definitely put something up to show you what they look like.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We can put that up. And the link as well.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, they're on my recommended reading list and product list of stuff to have, because I like them.
Oh.
So I will...
You have to recommend what we like. Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. I agree. Well, speaking of recommending what we like, I have a book review. Just a brief one, because what can you say? It's the most recent book that Stephen Arroyo, St. Stephen, put out.
His most recent?
He's got another in the works right
now. In the pipeline,
That is just about to come out. And that one, I believe, is about Jupiter.
So this book is called?
This one is called Person-to-Person Astrology and Energy Factors in Love, Sex, and Compatibility. So it was published in 2007. And boy, when I saw that this was coming out, I literally reserved it at, you know, Amazon.
Really? I don't think I've read that one, so that's going to be interesting.
I bought it 6 months before it came out.
Your seventh house card, the Scorpio Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what do you find enlightening about this particular
book? It's what I like is that it has all kinds of quotes and examples from actual people that he's interviewed, that he's gotten their testimonies, that, you know, that he's encountered in his own consulting practice, and he has all these sort of, you know, actual quotes from people who say, oh, I have, you know, Venus in Libra and this is what I'm like, or I dated, you know, three guys that were Aquarians and this is what they're like, mm-hmm. which I always find really compelling.
Okay.
You know, not always, you know, more helpful,
so it's
but
it's
in
a support
many cases.
To interpretation of natal charts. Then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And you know, not
with
so much
a particular
about,
bent towards relationships.
Very much so, but more about what people are like in relationships rather than interpreting like relationship charts. Nothing to do with synastry. Nothing to do with composite charts or about you know, analyzing a relationship, but more about you know, what are these individuals like in relationships and what kind of, you know. What kind of needs or you know, desires or habits do they bring to the table in a relationship?
So did you find it particularly related to you and your chart in a particular way? Or someone else you know that you'd like to share with us?
Well, let me think. It's all icing at this point because obviously his first, you know.
Sorry, it's all what?
Oh, icing, like icing on the cake.
Oh.
Yeah, it's all icing.
Okay, so it's just nice to have.
Yeah, I mean, because his first four books, Stephen Arroyo's, were obviously just, you know, the bedrock of my astrological knowledge, and I'm sure for many people they were and are. But yeah, so this is just, it's all, you know, compounding that kind of, and they are organized exactly as his, let me think the name of it.
Transformation Karma and something or other.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But he talks about the elements a lot and divides the, you know, he'll talk about all the earth signs and then all the, you know, and
yes.
and then each one and then all the fire signs. And so it's very much about, you know, knowing what fire signs are like and what they, you know. So he divides these up into the elements as well.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah, so it's very much organized in the way that you would, you know, that you would think based on everything that you've learned from his previous books. But, you know, for example, like the essence of Venus in Libra, for example, which I happen to have. So he'll talk about like Venus in air signs in general, and he'll give examples, and then he'll go through, you know, a bunch of different quotes from people that talk about, you know, my mother had, you know, Venus in Libra and blah, blah, blah. And
that you can relate to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, apparently Venus in Libra expresses affection sincerely, considerately, charmingly, and harmoniously.
And this is you.
Well, apparently so. I mean, you know, it's ameliorated by all kinds of other terrible things that I have in my chart that make me, you know.
I see this in you, in your relationship, the way you handled your relationship, yes.
Well, I am very considerate and polite.
I know. It's quite admirable.
Oh, thank you. I will take that as a great compliment, actually. And it's furthermore, they have a deep need for peace and tranquility and harmony, which is funny because, yes, but this is where the combinations of things come in. If you happen to also have Mars in the seventh house, which I have, this can tend to offset the pleasantries of Venus and Libra, I find.
So if you have Venus and Libra, is that your final dispositor?
Yeah, well, it's sort of weird. I've done research.
I must get your chart out.
No, it's terrible because it basically it comes out that I have two, Mercury and Venus. They're both apparently.
Oh, so you've got two trees. You've got two trees, yes. Okay.
Which is annoying because you want to have one. It's just easier to. My final depositor. No,
I've got two. There's two sides to your personality. You've got Team Venus and Team Mercury going on at both about the same time.
Yes. To put it in Twilight terms, I guess I do.
Well, that's how you talk about them when you've got two trees. You could have three.
I have two trees. I do. Yes, I have the Venus tree and the Mercury tree.
Yes. So one will be bigger than the other. One of your trees is bigger than the other. We'll have to look into that another day.
Totally.
But anyway, I'm digressing.
Yeah, but that happens. And then, yeah, need to develop relationships based on equal sharing and cooperation. He has three bullet points for each one. And I think that's very much true with me. So I thought that was interesting.
Okay.
Because not everybody has, you know, just in terms of relationships, you know, a fiendish like need to have everything be equal. But you know, when you have that, you assume that everyone does, and it's interesting that you know, that's something that you can kind of read and go, oh yeah, yes, not everyone has that.
So would you say this is a book for beginners? Is it going, or
it actually can be? Yeah, I mean, just like any of his books, there's definitely you know, a lot of astrological terms and whatnot, but he very much is conscious of wanting to be inclusive of everybody and bring everyone into the fold.
Okay.
So yeah, I think that someone could totally understand it without having a lot of astrology.
Okay, and the name of the book again was?
Person to Person Astrology. I'm holding it up as though you can see it.
By Stephen Arroyo.
By Stephen Arroyo.
Recommended by Owen.
Yes.
Well,
exactly.
Gosh.
And we'll link to it, and we'll have a little picture.
Excellent.
In our show notes.
In our show notes, yes, yeah. Indeed. On our website.
On our website, accessastrology.com.
And you can email us at accessastrology@gmail.com.
Yes, any questions or suggestions you have, please email us. Follow us on Twitter at accessastrology. And yeah, that's been our Aquarius episode.
It is. It's kind of, we didn't really know where it was going to go when we started, did we?
Yeah, we found lots to say.
Uh-huh.
Indeed. So, Access Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toes. I'm Arwen O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Price.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. See you next time.